You are indeed listening to the Home Improvement Show. Walter Assey is the president of Bernofco, and he sits in front of me. And I'm Joanne Brackus, and we are here to take your calls. Walter will answer all of your home improvement questions. You can call us 514-790-0800. That is the call line, or 514-790-0800 for the text line. If you text us, please remember to include your name so we know who you are talking to. Walter, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Actually. You have a pep in your step.
I do, eh?
Yeah. The closer we get to the holidays, you're like...
Yeah, I feel like the off time is coming. I'm going to have some
days off. I'm superstitious. I'm knocking on all the wood. Don't tempt the gods to give you... I mean, more work for you is good, but it also is exhausting. Yeah. We're going to have a guest coming up because we're talking about radon gas awareness. And you wanted to bring this up because you think it's really important. And I know nothing about this, but I'm excited.
Yeah. So we spoke to Health Canada and, they spoke to us, really. And I didn't even know that there was a radon awareness month, to be quite frank with you. And then the lady from Health Canada was kind enough to inform me that this is radon month.
And it's an issue. It's a real issue.
It's an issue because we're starting to learn a lot more about it. Mm. It's been a couple of years. And there's not enough awareness, I find. So I had the pleasure to speak to one of the scientists in Health Canada. Very nice guy, very knowledgeable. And he's going to come to the show November 30th, and we're going to talk about that. We have a few questions lined up for him. So if the listeners have any questions, that would be a great time that we can, go over them as well.
Yeah, I don't even know what the radon is. So anyway, that is coming up on the 30th. So we will keep that in mind. And again, start thinking about those questions because... Yeah,
it is an issue, especially for people that really use their basements. Because, I mean, typically the gases are concentrated in the basement. Mm. Just to say, there are testers that you could do yourself. You don't have to hire someone to test if you have radon gas or abnormal quantities of radon gas.
You can get a little test yourself?
You can, and okay. You plug it in, and you have to keep it for about 3 months. So you can get it. It's the best time to do it right now because, right now we're heating and we don't have enough ventilation in the home. So it will give you an accurate... So right now, if you buy it, you will have your results by end of January. And you'll have comprehensible results because what you want is... that's why it's a 3 month test. It's a long test.
Yeah,
but
it gives you
it gives you a real picture of what you have, because you could have the good days and the bad days, but 3 months would be a good timing. There's also monitors that you can install, and these are great because they give you radon gas concentration in real time.
Yeah.
So that you can have access.
What causes this? I mean, I know we have a whole interview coming up on it. But...
So, I mean, it's trapped gases. It's usually from the slab. Some areas have more concentration than others. So it's just something that is present. Now, how much of it is present is going to really boil down to the test that you do. It doesn't mean that, in certain cases, even your neighbor might have it and you don't. There's no real measurement for this on how and why you have it.
But if you have it, it's an issue. And again, that's coming up on November 30th. So if you have any questions, send them that way. 514-790-0800. Start calling us for your questions for Walter Assey, president of Renovco, for all your home improvement needs. Or you can text us. Walter also wanted to talk this morning about the kitchen renos. Is now the time for a kitchen reno?
The reason I say it's a time, because one of the projects that requires the most planning in any type of renovation you want to do in your home would be kitchens.
And
it's one of the most expensive. It's on the top three, I would say. And it have a lot of moving parts. Plus, it needs a lot of different trades. For one room, you have probably, this is the one renovation that requires the most amount of trades.
So what are we thinking? The engineer, renovation. The plumber, the architect,
You need a designer.
You
need a master electrician in most cases. You need a plumber. You need a demolition crew. You need the flooring crew. You need an ebonist. You need a countertop.
What you're saying is you need a lot of money.
Carpenters. So you know, for you to bring 10, 12 trades and coordinate all of that and make sure that everybody is on board on the right time, the right day, and the right hour requires a lot of planning ahead. The other thing is the design part of it is time consuming. So, and I'm gonna explain a couple of common mistakes that we find in you know, the most common mistakes we find in home renovations, in kitchen renovations. Lack of planning, lack of organization, and lack of time. So a lot of the time when we see mistakes, we see that whoever the homeowner hired did not create necessarily a 3D plan because it takes longer to do.
Wait, but if you're not doing the 3D plan, what are some of the pitfalls? Like, what happens?
So what they're doing is they're more often than not giving them a floor plan, which would require you to be extremely knowledgeable to understand how things are going to look like. Whereas a 3D, properly done, will give you a real realistic view of what your kitchen is going to look like. Even the colors, because we can introduce all the colors and everything else. So it's very important that you have your floor plan combined with a 3D plan to see exactly what you're getting.
You know, when you're talking about this, I'm thinking, Walter, because I read an amazing article about artificial intelligence and how it's changing absolutely everything. Do you think that that's going to start playing a factor in these kinds of designs, or is this still just like human brain power?
I do believe that artificial intelligence is going to take over a lot of these things. And, you know, to be honest, in some cases, it's not such a bad thing.
Because I hear that and I'm afraid people will lose their jobs. But...
Well, I mean, look, you know what? Other jobs will be created. The honest truth is when the computers came, we always thought
that's
the same
true.
Thing. And so, you know, it is, I would, you know, if my son is going to learn something in the university, tell him, okay, how to create robotics or how to create artificial intelligence. So these are the types of jobs that are going to be out there.
And it's going to affect your, I mean, all the, in my brain, the builders will still be builders.
Well, I mean, that's probably going to be one of the last things that artificial intelligence is going to take over. Mm. That's my personal opinion. So we're still not as advanced.
But are you guys using it at all now, you know, for like kitchens that are complicated, as you say?
Well, I mean, right now, for example, you have, I wouldn't call it artificial intelligence, but a lot of the stuff is computerized. So if you are, and that was part of what we need to talk about as far as kitchen manufacturing and what have you. Now, the idea with kitchen manufacturing is also, you know, the actual cabinet making process might have a lot of human error in it.
Oh, yeah.
They cut the wrong size, or they ordered the wrong thing, or so on and so forth. A lot of the more advanced cabinet making shops, they have CNC machines. Everything is computerized.
It's already there.
You bring in your plan, you put it in the computer, and everything is automatically cut. So that limits the errors that
the
are
human
done
error.
In the process.
Does it make it more expensive because they're using all this extra technology?
Well, the front investment, so the initial investment is always a lot more expensive, but to be quite frank, it's less labor intensive in the sense that you need less laborers to operate the shop.
I love this because we were chatting and I'm now thinking about the AI in your field and I have so many questions. 514-790-0800. Start sending us your questions. Call in to speak to Walter Assey. He is the president of Renovco, and he's here to answer your home improvement needs. All your questions. Kathy from Côte Saint-Luc, Walter says, we are switching to electric heating and a new heat pump next week. We're told that this will be a bring-in savings, I'm guessing she's saying. How so if we have low hydro rates now, due to the dual energy oil electric heating, which we will lose by going all electric. So which is it? How are they going to be saving?
So, I mean, that's partially correct, partially incorrect. The fact that they had an older heat pump, in most cases, older heat pumps would have kicked in at minus 12, up to minus 12, I should say. Whereas the newer heat pumps will still kick in until minus 30. So obviously, the heat pumps are the machines that use the least amount of energy.
Oh.
Whereas what she had before, she probably was more heavily reliant on the furnace that takes more energy. So that's pretty much how the savings are calculated. But if you go, let's say, with still a dual energy, but a dual energy that's still approved, like natural gas or something like that, then probably she will, with a newer heat pump, the combination of the two would save her more money.
Which do you recommend, though?
I mean, if she has the infrastructure, the main issue would be the infrastructure. Meaning, if you have it in place, the initial investment would be more, reasonable. But if you don't, then you might have to spend a lot of extra money up front that make it maybe more, more financially difficult to do. And it will require a long-term return. Mm. Eventually, you'll make your money back. So the fact that we have those efficient heat pumps, going electric now makes sense.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Okay. Thank you for that. We have another question here concerning the dry heat, which we've talked a lot about in the show with electric, the baseboards that you don't like.
Yeah.
Solutions to get around it.
Humidifiers.
And like lots everywhere?
Look, the main issue that you have with electric baseboards is actually it burns the air particles. So it makes the air more dry. Already, we don't have enough humidity in the winter.
Mm.
So there's a couple of solutions, actually. One of them would be, believe it or not, in a humid day in the winter, when you see the humidity is high, you could open the window and get some humidity in.
Okay.
But the real solution that you're going to really, because that's not as viable, because it defies the whole purpose, to bring in the cold air to heat the house. So the other solution would be humidifiers and in every room. Or in all the rooms that you actually spend time on. Not every room, but so if you, in the bedroom for sure, because at night that's probably the most crucial for you, in the living room as well. And what I would do is I would always invest in a hygrometer.
In a what, sorry?
Hygrometer. So it reads the relative humidity of the room. Now, there are portable ones. Get a decent quality one, don't get the cheap ones because you want an accurate reading. And the good thing with the portable ones is you could just move them around. You don't have to buy a hygrometer for every room. And that will give you really, what you really want to stay is within between 55 to 60%. 55 would be the ideal relative humidity. That's summer and winter, by the way. So in the summer, you probably need to dehumidify if you don't have an air condition. And that will ensure that you have that you're breathing healthy air constantly.
Question: I'm just having images of like the humidifier in my parents' basement in Outremont when I was a kid. These things used to be clunky and big and make all the sounds. They've evolved.
There's a lot of them are very small now. And what I like is the ones that don't have filters. Just what they do is they just spit water into the ambient air, vapor, I should say, not water. I wouldn't get the hot. There's hot and there's cold. Mm. I don't like the hot one because I feel that it creates bacteria and stuff. So the cold air one is what I would, it's my personal favorite. And it's just you literally fill up the air and start the machine and just give you the vapor. It does make a difference for sure.
Interesting. 514-790-0800. That is the number for the phone line and also for the text line. A question about windows. I'm getting a fog on my window in the winter months. I guess it means fog, moisture.
Yeah.
Does that mean I need to change the windows?
So what that means in most cases is the gap seal on your glass pane is broken. So the thermal itself, it's not doing its job. So you have a choice. Either you change the window or you simply have to change. If the frame of the window is still good, you can simply change the glass pane itself. Mm. So you call a vitrerie, like a glass shop. They come, they take the measurement, they take out the old thermal, and it's going to cost you a lot cheaper for sure. And it's a less intrusive job because you don't have to remove the trims. You don't have to...
How do you know that the frame is no good?
Well, in a lot of cases, it would be the visual inspection. Second thing is you put your hand around the frame to see if you feel any air leaks, if you see any cracks in the frame, if you see any formation of frost, air, like if you feel any air current coming in. These are really the telltale signs. And if the frame is an older generation frame, so it's like that older aluminum or, you mm-hmm. know, that visually you feel that the frame is tired, then wood frame for sure I would change. Like there's no question about it, because most often than not, it's not good anymore.
There's a question, speaking of the humidity actually and in the window and the conversation about the humidifier. Mark writes in, at 55-60% humidity, wouldn't that lead to condensation on the windows?
No. 55% is where you want to be at. That's the ideal. You know, if you find that you're over-humidifying, the telltale signs would be condensation. He's right. And you can just simply decrease the amount of humidity. But at 55%, more often than not, it's not the case, especially in the winter. The other thing that we want to kind of touch base on is you have expansion and contraction of materials when you don't have the proper humidification in the house or dehumidification. So more often than not, a house that is not mechanically humidified or dehumidified or does not have a good system to regulate all of that. What happens is you see, like in the winter, everything contracts. So if you start seeing bigger openings on your floor, in the summer you see it expand. So you might see that the doors do not lock as well because of the humidity.
It's like a living, breathing entity.
That is correct.
All these materials.
So it's also important to preserve the components in the house. You know, the doors, the floors, and so on and so forth. And you will see that there's a difference when you are, you know, addressing these things. That you will have less of a problem dealing with that.
So it's not just the air quality; it's actually the impact on the materials in the home as well.
Yeah, so I mean, hardwood, that's one of the things. And that's why it's important when you, for example, install new floors, they tell you have to keep, it's very important that you keep the house under that humidity for so many days while you're installing it. You keep the wood inside the house for at least 2-3 days in order for it to take the humidity of the ambient air that is in the house before you install it. So all of these things have a reasoning behind them.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. 514-790-0800. Call us or text us your questions for Walter Assey, president of Renovco. You're listening to the Home Improvement Show. 514-790-0800. Walter Assey is taking your calls. He is the president of Renovco. If you have any questions for your home improvement projects, needs, or you can text us. Be sure to leave your name if you text us. We have a question/comment regarding the question that we received earlier about the heat pump. So the texter writes, Walter, you save with the heat pumps, but the savings are offset by the repairs. You'll be replacing your heat pump every 10 years. So be ready to spend at least $5,000 to $10,000. I have the top of the line heat pump and would not recommend a heat pump cheaper to stay with the baseboards. What do you think about that?
That is incorrect. The heat pump, I mean, any older heat pump, usually in the 10-year mark, you would have to change a compressor or something to it. So it's not like the newer ones require more repairs. As a matter of fact, the older heat pumps are more often than not guaranteed for 5 years. The newer heat pumps are guaranteed labor and parts, parts for 10 years. So when the manufacturers themselves are really guaranteeing it for 10 years,
that
should tell you something. Because usually you are guaranteed that, you know, they don't want to be spending money in parts. So they're built to last longer because the warranties now are longer.
But
right?
$5,000 to $10,000, does that sound right? That sounds
well.
Like
$5,000 to $10,000 is what a heat pump, depending on the size of the heat pump and the brand, because there are different brands. $5,000 to $10,000 seems right in the mark, but you don't have to spend it every 10 years. Even with the older heat pumps, in a lot of cases, you see heat pumps that are 20 years old that are still operational. Yes, you might have to have a repair or two on them done, But it's not a complete rehaul for you to go with a 5 to 10. Now, the other thing with the electrical baseboards, they do consume more energy, and it's not a healthy way of heating.
Walter really doesn't like the electric baseboards.
I really don't. And you know, again, there's multiple things. I mean, even like the heat pump, you have an air conditioning function to it, which is very handy in the summer. And it's healthy to your home as well, because it helps dehumidify your home in the summer. So there are, when you make a decision, it's not only about dollars and cents. Because it could also be about dollars and cents, but you have to think about the bigger picture. Conserving your house, not creating so much humidity in the air in the home that you could have mold spores being created, which creates bad air quality, which will lead you to other repairs in the future as well. So it's not just about, okay, I pay that much and I pay that much. It's about the bigger picture. Healthier air quality, that's what you, number one thing you want to focus on in a house. The other thing would be the functionality of what you're, it's, you have one thermostat that will control. You don't have to go to every room and control the thermostat yourself. So there's a lot of babysitting when it comes to electric baseboards, and it's not really the most comfortable, and it's not really the most eye-pleasing as well.
It's true that the look of the house it makes the house look a little bit dated. It's like a blast from the past.
Voilà.
We have Evelyn on the line. Evelyn, can you hear us? Can Evelyn hear us?
Yes.
Hi, Evelyn. You're in St. Lazare and you have a question for Walter. Take it away.
Yes, I've got a question because you're talking about heat pumps. What is your feeling, Walter, on the heat pumps that you install as a portable, it looks like a portable unit in an older home that you would put on the wall, and you've got a small compressor or a small unit outside to with the fan? We've been contemplating that for an older home.
So are you primarily using that for heat, or you're using that for air conditioning?
That'll be primarily for air conditioning, because the house that I'm thinking of is actually an older home in NDG where we've got an electric furnace pushing an old furnace that was an oil furnace that was changed over to electric. Mm-hmm. So this would be like a supplementary unit put in, although they're proposing that it's does do heat. We're looking at it mostly for air conditioning.
Okay, so that's the answer I'd like to hear. The reason being is these units are usually put closer to the ceiling.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, cold air goes down, hot air rises. So when you use it for heat, you're close to the ceiling, you're kind of heating the ceiling more than heating the floors.
Right.
Whereas when you're using it for the air conditioning, it's perfect use, because now it's actually in a much more strategic place. And the reverse would have been right for when you use air conditioning, but you have your floor registers on the floor. It would have been better to have it up in the ceiling. So yes, 100%. That it's a good, and it's good for auxiliary heat. Like in a very 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 hot cold day, you could still use it, and it will still work as well to help heat up the room faster. And you're not spending so much money because you're using the heat pump, which doesn't take as much amperage. So it's a win-win. The great news with these types of machines is you now have one heat pump with multiple heads. So you could have it, let's say, in your master bedroom, and you could have it in the living room, and you can potentially have it in the family room. You can have up to 5-6 heads in certain cases. So it can really give you comfort without having to go through the big costing of ducting and everything else in the process.
Correct. And just one other question about positioning of this heat pump. The installer is proposing not to put it in the stairwell, which is where we've seen these go most of the time. You know, it's an older NDG home with a middle staircase that goes up,
yeah,
and there's a small tight space. So he's proposing to put it in the hall where there's room between a closet and the ceiling, and then put the compressor, the unit that goes back outside towards the corner of the closet. Does that sound like a good idea?
Well, I mean, typically they want to look strategically where they want to put it so it can spread to the most amount of rooms possible, right? We put it on staircases in cases where we want it to also help cool the downstairs as well as the upstairs. So that's why a staircase would be recommended, because it will kind of help in both floors. Now, if you're more interested in the main floor and less interested in the bedrooms, then putting it in the hallway might help. So, I mean, that's really going to have to be more visual, and there have to be a strategic reason why. The other issue would be, of course, all the piping that have to go with it. So sometimes they give you recommendations only because it's simpler for them. So just make sure that that's not the case in this, and it's, he's giving you more practicality and you know, logistically it's placed right, that it actually furnishes the rooms that you want to furnish. You're not gonna be efficient in all the rooms. So don't try to be too greedy in the process. It just, you know, make sure that you choose the rooms that you really want and focus your installations accordingly.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that, Evelyn. Have a good one. We've got lots of calls coming in for Walter. Again, 514-790-0800. Before we get to them, a quick question about electric charger for a car installed. What is the average price?
Well, I mean, when it comes to electric chargers, there's different amperage. And the higher you go, the higher the price. So it starts up, the minimum would be 40 amps, and that would be the cheapest.
Which is what, approximately, price-wise?
It's about, let's say, about $900
Okay.
And it can go up to $3,000, $4,000, depending on, you know, what you install. And also the other thing is depending on the amperage you have on the panel. So,
okay, interesting. Again, we are taking some calls and some questions. You are listening to the Home Improvement Show. The callers stay on the line. We'll get to you in just a bit. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Nick from Rivière des Prairies is on the line. Then he has a question for Walter. Nick, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you very much. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. This question is in regards to Walter. I live in a condo on a third floor. There's three bedrooms, and the heating system is Walter's favorite. It's, unfortunately, electric baseboard heaters.
Your favorite.
About 5 years ago in Montreal, it was a rule that we cannot have a fireplace anymore unless it's a certain amount of smoke and fire that is burnt per, I don't know. But anyways, we have our fireplace installed and approved by the city and by the inspectors. My question is, circulating the heat from the fireplace, it would cost me another $1,500 if I had the people install a kind of a cylinder type of a fan where the fireplace is. I don't want to do that. I want to know how efficient are those circulating fans, which is powered by the draft of the heat of the fireplace. Does the fireplace need to produce a lot of heat to operate those little fans?
So if you have a slow combustion, I think that's what you're referring to, a type of fireplace. These are, to begin with, extremely, extremely efficient. So you don't need that extra help in any way, shape, or form. And that's, you know, that's part of the appeal to them, is that they're made to be efficient. So they burn the logs way slower and they heat the house a lot more. I don't think you should add any bells and whistles to them. That's my personal opinion. I would try to heat the house without it, and then I would actually look and see my savings as I'm using the fireplace, and then the following year you could decide whether you want to add any fans or anything to it in order to help it.
Okay, Nick, does that help you out?
That is an excellent answer. I thank you very much.
I have a great one, Nick. We've got Wendy on the line. She's been waiting patiently to speak to Walter. Wendy is from Point Claire. Wendy, take it away.
Hi.
Hi.
I live in a condo. I'm on the top floor, which is the eighth floor, and I often get a smell that It actually smells like sewer.
Oof.
And I don't know where it comes from or what, how to get rid of it. Come on, Ben.
Okay. So sewer smell usually is associated with drains.
Okay.
So one of the simpler ways to look at this is if you have, let's say, for example, a bathroom in your condo that you don't use as often.
Someone else suggested that, and it's not really the case.
Okay, so you use all your drains, meaning if you have a laundry sink somewhere or, any place where it does have a drain or even a floor mm-hmm. drain. For example, right. in the furnace rooms in a lot of condos, they have those floor drains, and they're very rarely used. In a lot of cases, that will be the culprit.
Okay.
So what you want to do is you want to pour a mineral oil or constantly pour in water. If you don't want to do that, the reason we say oil, because it evaporates at a much slower rate and stays in the siphon P-trap, and it will prevent those smells from coming back up.
Mineral oil or mineral water?
Mineral oil. Mineral like anything, oil. Oils okay. in general, they mm-hmm. they don't evaporate as fast as water.
Okay.
Unless you want to use water, but you have to do it a lot more often. Meaning often. At least once every couple of days, you have to pour some water into the drink.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'll try that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you so much for that call. Wendy again from Point Claire. We have a question here, and I don't know if I'm saying this correctly. It says, hi, Walter. A neighbor pointed out that my house may have foundation problems requiring piling the foundation. A building engineer was brought in. He took lots of measurements, thought the same thing. Two different structural engineers were then brought in, and both indicated that this was uncalled for. Who am I to believe, the building engineer or the structural engineers? Thank you for your opinion. That is Michael from LaSalle.
Structural engineer, and even at that, I would actually get more than one opinion because it's a bit of an extreme measure when you need to drive in piles underneath your foundation. That
so
means,
what is it piling? They're just so grabbing?
It's when your house is sinking into the ground due to unstable soil underneath it that was not properly compacted at the time that they built the home.
So it's expensive, I'm saying.
Or because you have some type of a water stream under the home that's creating some erosion. So there's many reasons that this could happen. But before we go straight to that scenario, which is expensive and it's a big job, I will have a couple of opinions. You can always also call a foundation specialist. So some of these foundation specialists, like, for example, I'm it's not to advertise, but I'm just going to throw it out there because they're known, Brisson. That's what they do all day long. And they have technicians that, or even engineers that can come and give an opinion on that. But I would go with a structural engineer more than a building engineer in this case.
Hmm. Why?
Because a structure found this is a case of structure. This is not a case of a building engineer is great to design the building. A structural engineer is more targeted towards the structural issues. They are more trained to give solutions to these issues, to pinpoint the reasoning behind them. They do the proper research. They can ask for soil tests in certain cases to see, why is this happening. The composition of the soil could be a factor. So they have more knowledge on what to do to explore the problem further and to give solutions, different solutions.
Interesting, because you said it's costly. How much is the piling?
It depends. It depends on how many piles they're recommending, but it could go up to the hundreds of thousands. That's what I'm saying.
So you we're have just to be, piling. We're like
no. What you do is you drive piles underneath. So it's like a cylindrical pile that you go underneath, and in order to stabilize the foundation from sinking. So it's a bigger job. That's why I'm saying before you go with that extreme, I would just get a couple of more opinions.
Double, triple check. All right. I hope that helps you out. That's Michael from LaSalle. That does it for us. Walter Assey again is the president of Home Improvement of Renovco. And he is the president of the show, of the Home Improvement Show, if you will.